And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We're there till 3 on this Wednesday as we help you get over the hump and towards the weekend with plenty to do. This is my final show of the week, so I got a lot of things to give my opinion on over the next couple of hours. Coming up, what we saw last night in Brooklyn. Plus, I'll let you know who will win the college football national championship this year. What is or will be the Gamecocks' swing game this fall? We also have to be patient with Sam Darnold. I got some thoughts on Aaron Rodgers. Major League Baseball finally put out their plan to curb the sticky stuff use on the mound. We'll look ahead to next year's March Madness. We got the best nickname in college football. A local media member had an awkward situation. Plus, we'll help you get ready for Father's Day and a whole lot more over the next couple of hours. We'll have a member of the Charleston Battery join us in about an hour. And we'll have a former Super Bowl winner and Olympic athlete join us later on this afternoon as well. If we have time, Urban Meyer with some comments about Trevor Lawrence. We got a lot to do between now and 3. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. You can get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays, on Facebook, ESPN Charleston, via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head on over there where you can leave a comment for the show on our show page. You can also find the latest versions of the show podcasted there. Or you could take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Wednesday, then I'm off for the rest of the week. Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, it is a rather odd camel ride day for us. Yeah. But yeah, hey, we're going to enjoy the next couple days off. I know you're going to be out of town and all that. And
yes,
that's right. A nice little trip, a change of pace for you.
Yeah. Looking forward to it. Get to go celebrate Father's Day up with the family for the weekend. Take a few days off. Yeah, you know, Wednesday is always about getting over the hump towards the weekend. Well, for me, this is like my weekend. And my weekend begins, you know, at 3 o'clock, essentially. So it is a little bit different. I'll miss hanging out for the next couple of days with everyone. We'll be back next week on Tuesday. I'll be off on Monday as well.
So, let's see, 5-day weekend?
Yeah, how about
that?
Wow. I could get used to that, all these short weeks here in the summer.
The only thing better I ever heard was Def Leppard when they did their 7-day weekend tour.
That's right up my alley. All right, let me start with this. What we saw last night was incredible. It's why I still gave the Nets a chance. I still picked the Nets to win in 7 games, and I gave them that chance for 3 reasons. Number one, the pressure is now on Milwaukee. And sure enough, they blew a 17-point lead last night and lost. Number two, the Nets get to be the home team for 2 of the final 3 games. And the home team has now continued to win every matchup, all 8 matchups between these two teams this year. It continued last night. I think it continues in the series. I think Milwaukee wins at home on Thursday, and then Brooklyn closes it out in Game 7 at home this weekend. And the third reason, which turned out to be most important, because the Nets are the ones that have Kevin Durant. He's the best scorer in the league. And as we saw last night, I will take him over Giannis at the end of a playoff game. At the end of any game. Give me Kevin Durant. I'll take my chances. I was texting with my brothers last night, as we often do during these games. And, you know, I'm the one who works in sports, and I'm the one who gets paid to have my sports opinions. But when it comes to basketball, I trust their opinions as well. And we were all in agreement last night. Kevin Durant is the best scorer of all time. How's that for a hot take heading into my weekend? And I don't think it's hyperbolic. I don't think this is being a prisoner of the moment. It's not based off of performance, but instead based off of ability. If you wanted to base it off of performance, yeah, Kobe was probably better. Even when Kobe played with other stars, he was always the go-to guy. And really, the only other true star he played with was Shaq for the first half of his career. Then he was the guy. Meanwhile, for Durant, you had Russell Westbrook and even James Harden at OKC. Right, you go to Golden State, you have Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, they have to get their shots. Now even in Brooklyn with Kyrie and James Harden, and then he's been injured with the Achilles. So based off of performance, based off of numbers, right, if you want to compare resumes, yeah, sure, there are some other guys who on the stat sheet look to be better scorers. But when it comes to ability, I don't think anyone tops Durant. Now, if I need a basket to win a game, end of the game, last possession, I still probably pick Michael Jordan in his prime before I'm picking Kevin Durant. Michael Jordan was that ultimate killer. But just in terms of ability, the ability to score the basketball, the things that can be done offensively on the floor, nobody tops Kevin Durant. If you were building the perfect basketball player in the video game NBA 2K, you would just build Kevin Durant. That's what you would do. He's listed at 6'10", 6'11", depending on where you look. I think it was Ryan Hollins. I heard one of his former teammates last week tell a story that Kevin Durant is actually 7'1". But he was concerned that if he was listed at 7'1", teams would try to make him play inside. And he didn't want to play in the post. That's not his style. So he has always lied and said he's like 6'10", which is still crazy to put that guy out on the perimeter. Right, but if he's 7'1", you don't want him to be playing inside more. He didn't want to do that. That's at least what I think was Ryan Hollins. I can't remember exactly, but it was an interview last week. One of Durant's former teammates, he said, yeah, I've stood next to him. The guy's 7'1". He tells everyone he's 6'10". He's really 7'1". So you've got a 7'1 guard, right? He's got the size and the athleticism and the length of a center. He's got the shooting ability of a shooting guard. He's got the athleticism and ball handling of a point guard. He is like the perfect machine. It's what you would make in a lab if you were trying to create the greatest basketball player. He can pull up from almost midcourt. Right? How about that shot last night in the final minute that essentially sealed the win? 7-1 guy pulling up from beyond the arc like a double clutch three with the shot clock winding down, drills it. He's athletic. He can shoot. Shooting almost 40% from beyond the arc in his career. He has one of the best mid-range games in the league. He can get to the rim if he wants to. He's great on turnarounds, on pull-ups. He can slash. He can drive. He can get to the rim. He can score any way possible. He can catch and shoot. He can score off screens. He can back you down if he wants. He can play inside a little bit. And he does it all at 7 foot. He's got good handles. He can defend. He's a good passer. We've never seen somebody with this combination before. A guy that size, that athletic, with those good of perimeter skills. Right, we thought Magic Johnson changed the game 40 years ago because he was playing point guard at 6'7 or 6'9, whatever he was. What about Kevin Durant at apparently 7 foot? I always said this about Dwight Howard, that Dwight Howard could have been the most dominant player we had ever seen because nobody had his size and his body. He was unstoppable when he wanted to be. Now, the effort wasn't always there. He never developed any post moves, never developed a shot. Dwight Howard couldn't do anything except dunk on you. But he was so physical, so big, you couldn't stop him. When he got going, right, when he got the ball in the post, he'd just back you to the rim, turn around, drop it in, or dunk it over you. He was a freak. There's nothing you could do. He had very little skill, but he had one of the greatest bodies we've seen of an athlete. I mean, LeBron James is up there as well, but Dwight Howard, he came out of high school. He was already built. He was a freak. Right, you compare him to the other big guys, Shaq was overweight. Shaq was unstoppable, but then, you know, he got too big. He couldn't get up and down the floor. He couldn't move as well. Dwight Howard still had that dominance while keeping his athleticism. Jabbar wasn't built like Dwight Howard. He didn't have like the muscles and the build. Dwight Howard, you just couldn't stop him from getting to the rim. And if he was motivated, and when he was motivated, nobody could stop him from getting to the rim and dunking. I mean, he would have huge performances for Orlando. He led them to the NBA Finals that one year. He just never seemed to care. Dwight Howard never seemed to care enough. But I always thought with his build, his athleticism, if he wanted to, if he actually worked at it, if he actually tried hard, gave it 100% every night on the court, he could have been the most dominant player we had ever seen. He just never cared. Kevin Durant does. Kevin Durant's problem is actually he cares too much. And the best in everything are the ones that can do everything. In baseball, the best players are described as five-tool players. They can run, they can hit, they can field, they can throw. Mike Trout, right? Babe Ruth, who's one of the greats of all time. He pitched and hit. Now Otani's taking over the league by storm because he can pitch and hit. In football, the best running backs are the ones that can also catch out of the backfield. The best quarterbacks nowadays are the athletic ones that can make plays with their legs as well. Think Pat Mahomes. And the best wide receivers are guys like Randy Moss. We talked about this on the show yesterday. Those wide receivers that have the combination where they're fast, they're tall, they can jump. How do you defend that? You have to pick your poison. Right? They're bigger than you, they're taller than you, and yet they're still faster than you. Pick your poison. It's like when you guard Kevin Durant. You have to pick your poison. What do you want to try to take away? Because he can do everything. The best employee at your company is the one that can do everything. Everyone can do something really well. That's why you're hired. Maybe you're a really good salesman. You're really good at marketing. You're good at graphic design. Whatever it is, you're good at PR. You're good at writing. Everybody has that one skill. That's why you get your jobs. Because you're really good at what you do. Just like everyone in the NBA can do something really well. Maybe this guy can't score very much, but he's a great defender. This guy over here, he can only shoot it. Can't drive to the rim, doesn't play a lot of defense, but boy, can he shoot. This other guy over here, he can score at the rim. Right? Doesn't have a perimeter game, but he can score around the rim. Oh, this guy over here, he's got a good pull-up. This guy, he's just a good defensive player. Everyone has something. That's why they're in the league. But Durant can do it all. He can do everything. And the guy at your office that can do everything, he's the best employee as well. The most successful people are Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. Elon Musk does everything. He can code. He knows computers. He's created computer games before. He created PayPal, working with banks and money. Then he's working on spaceships. Now he's making cars. He's making tunnels. He's doing everything. Right? Jeff Bezos and Amazon, they do everything. They started selling books. Then they moved with the movies and clothes and streaming and food. And they're taking over the world. And they have deliveries by drone. They're doing everything. The more you can do, the better off you are. And Durant can do everything. We've never seen somebody like this. He played every minute last night and posted a triple-double. He scored 30 points in the second half to lead the Nets back in the biggest game of his career. Right now, winning titles, those were more important. But he also had Steph Curry and Klay Thompson alongside him. Right? You ever walk into a situation and you think, oh, good thing I got my buddies with me. Now, maybe you're walking into a fight, and it's like, oh, good thing I got backup. But if you're walking in by yourself, it's a little more stressful. Like, oh, boy, I got to take on this group, and no one's around. It's just me. I'm in big trouble. That was Kevin Durant last night. When he won those NBA championships or was playing in the NBA Finals, he always had those other stars with him. Last night, it was on him. That's why it was a bigger game for Kevin Durant. It was the biggest of his career. And forget having to win the series. I think he already proved he can win on his own. What a performance last night from Durant. And who would have thought that Jeff Green's injury would be more important than Harden or Kyrie's? Jeff Green was great last night. James Harden, meanwhile, was a liability. He shouldn't have even played out there. And I don't know why he ended up playing like over 40 minutes. Put him on the bench, let him rest, because he wasn't doing much good. And in the second half, Durant said, forget this guy, I'm going to take over. Right? In the first half, they were getting guys involved. James Harden was running the offense. He couldn't do anything out there. By the second half, Durant said, forget that, give me the basketball. And there was a stretch there where Durant either scored or assisted on something like 52 of the Nets' final 63 points. It was all him. And Jeff Green was able to play off of that. And that's why, you know, he was open for threes. Joe Harris couldn't make them. Harris has been terrible this series. He usually is the one that benefits. Last night it was Jeff Green benefiting. And when you're missing stars like that, you need other players to step up. This time Jeff Green was the one to step up. That's another reason why Brooklyn won last night. Durant and Green combined for two-thirds of the Nets' points last night. And Durant became the only player in NBA history to score at least 45 points, to have at least 15 rebounds, and have at least 10 assists in a playoff game. No one has ever done that before. Durant did it last night, playing every minute without any other star power. Durant is the most talented scorer the NBA has ever had. That combination of skills and size and athleticism, and let's not forget, doing it all after a torn Achilles. No one plays better after that injury. No one even plays as well after that injury. Kevin Durant has, and he proved himself last night. He shouldn't have had to, but that was the narrative. And last night, I think, was enough to debunk it. Durant is good enough to not only win on his own, but he also has the skill set to be the best scorer in the NBA we've ever seen. Not statistically. Don't give me stats. Oh, Karl Malone scored all these points, and you know, Bill Russell and these guys. I don't care. If you were building the ultimate basketball player, you would build Kevin Durant. And the dude can't be stopped. Kendrick Perkins was on SVP's SportsCenter last night after the game. Perk is a former teammate of Kevin Durant. And Kendrick Perkins called it the best performance of Kevin Durant's career.
Look, This was Kevin Durant's greatest performance of his NBA career. And he put the Bucks over that over his lap and gave them a spanking with a leather belt. He did it in every form and fashion. Offensively, we already know that he's one of the greatest scorers of all time. But the way he was able to facilitate for others, get Jeff Green involved, get Bruce Brown involved, create Bucks, get Ethan Brooks. He rebounded at a high rate. He anchored the defense. He anchored the defense when they moved him to the five position. He was phenomenal all across the board. And reminder to all the folks out there in the world today, the last time somebody doubted Kevin Durant, we were in Oklahoma City. They called him Mr. Unreliable, and he came out and delivered in great fashion, and he did that again tonight. I'm so happy for him.
Kendrick Perkins last night on his former teammate Kevin Durant, who had an incredible performance and showed he's the greatest scorer we've seen in the NBA. Coming up, I will tell you who will win the college football national title this year. I mean, you have a pretty good chance of picking as well. It's fairly obvious. And we'll do it when we come back. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Coming up, I will tell you who will win the national title in college football this year. It's the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. After today, I'm off until next Tuesday. We'll get you ready for Father's Day. Come up a little bit later on as this is the final show for us before Father's Day. On the text line, we opened the show talking about Kevin Durant. On the text line, somebody said Milwaukee was hilariously bad. Bad coaching, bad execution. Yeah, I think I've adjusted my boxers more today than Budenholzer adjusted last night during the game. Now, look, that's Budenholzer's reputation. He's not a very good – he's always struggled in the playoffs. What I don't get about the NBA, and I'm the biggest NBA guy around here, but what I don't get about the NBA is, you know, I grew up playing basketball, and I never played past high school. But when you were the star of the team, you wanted to go up against the other star of the team. And yet, in the NBA, we don't see that. Now, maybe it's because some of these guys are trying to conserve their energy for offense. You know, like one of my brothers was like the second leading scorer in the state. He was a great player, and he would always say that, right? You take a few plays off, I'm the leading scorer. I've got to do so much on offense. I got to take a few plays off on defense to catch my breath. But in the NBA, these guys are freak athletes. They're the greatest players in the world. How come Giannis didn't guard Durant once last night? At least not in the second half. Now, P.J. Tucker did a great job on Durant in Milwaukee, but that's because the referees let him get away with everything. Back in Brooklyn last night, they called it a little bit tighter. Wasn't able to just be physical with Durant. He was early on. Durant had that turnover on the baseline because P.J. Tucker just bodied him and he lost the basketball. But in general, it wasn't as physical last night as it was in Milwaukee. And P.J. Tucker, you know, he's a solid defender, but Giannis is the defensive player of the year. And he has been multiple times. He didn't guard Durant once. And if I'm a star of a team, if I'm an MVP player, and my season is on the line, because Game 5, if you win Game 5 in a series like that, you win about 83% of the time, something crazy like that. That's your season last night. Now you have to win the next two. That's hard. If I'm Giannis, even if the coach is saying, no, forget that. I'm telling PJ, switch off. I got him. I'm the defensive player of the year. And Giannis hasn't been great on Durant, but, I mean, he's supposed to be the best defensive player in the league. You have this guy going off. He's the only star they have. And then Jeff Green. Right? But they had Holiday, a good defender, on James Harden. Harden wasn't – he was 50%. He wasn't moving out there. So I never – and it happened in the Hawks-Sixers series. Ben Simmons is considered the best defensive player in the league. Why wasn't he guarding Trae Young to begin the series? What do you say – you have the best defensive player. What are you saving him for? Who are you using him on? If you're the best defensive player and if you're a star like that, you should want to go up against the other stars. I know you got to work hard on the offensive end. And, you know, Durant played the whole game. I'm sure he's burned out up and down the floor. He was carrying that team for 48 minutes, right? Giannis has to do something similar. But if you're the best defensive player on the team, don't you want to guard the other team's best offensive player? Doesn't the coach want you to do so? They used P.J. Tucker last night, Chris Middleton, even Brooke Lopez, you know, Pat Connaughton. Why not use Giannis, the defensive player of the year, on Kevin Durant? I don't get this about the NBA. Your best player should go up against their best player. Instead, Durant was, I mean, it probably wouldn't have made a difference last night, but he was just torching everyone instead. Who will win the national title in college football this year? Bud Elliott of 24/7 Sports pointed this out yesterday, that the last 10 national champions all have something in common. More than half of their rosters were made up of 4- and 5-star recruits. Shocking, right? The teams with the best players are the teams winning the national titles. Who would have ever guessed? If you go back and look at the past decade, Alabama won in 2011. 71% of their roster were made up of 4- or 5-star recruits. In 2012, Alabama won again and again at 71%. In 2013, it was Florida State at 53% of their roster. 2014, Ohio State, 68%. 2015, Alabama, 77%. 2016, Clemson at only 52% of their roster being 4- or 5-star recruits. 2017, Alabama at 80%. 2018, Clemson at 61%. 2019, LSU at 64%. And last year, Alabama with 83% of their roster being 4- and/or 5-star recruits. Now, what stands out from that list of the past 10 champions is the job done by the ACC teams. FSU just barely cracked 50%. So, too, did Clemson. Meanwhile, you have Alabama at 83%. That's a big difference. That's a third of your roster as the difference. Right? They had a third of their roster more, a third of their roster more of 4- and 5-star recruits. So credit to Clemson, Florida State, the teams that have come from other than the SEC to win national championships lately. But which teams hit this number in 2021? Because the last 10 champions have all had at least half of their roster made up of 4- and 5-star recruits. Who fits that criteria this year? Which teams can win the national title this year? Well, the top of this list certainly won't surprise you. Alabama right now is at 84%, which is the highest we have seen in over a decade. On paper, they have the most talented team based off of recruiting in over a decade. Georgia is second at 80%. Ohio State is third at 79% of their roster. Clemson is fourth at 67% of their roster, much higher now than even when they won their national titles. Then you have LSU, Oklahoma, Texas, and Florida all at 66% of their roster. Texas A&M at 61%, Michigan 58%, Auburn, Oregon, Penn State all at 56%. Notre Dame and Miami are each at 55%, USC 53%. Those percentages representing the percentage of the roster made up of 4- and 5-star recruits. And you have to be over 50% to win a national championship. That's what the data tells us. So those are 16 teams right there that could win a national championship this year. Obviously, only one of them can. But if you're under that 50%, the chances of you winning a national title are incredibly slim. Some takeaways from that list of 16 teams I just ran off. Number one, no surprise at the top of the list. Right where you have Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, LSU, even Oklahoma. Those are the top six. No surprise. Those are usually the top teams. In fact, most of the list isn't all that surprising. There's no random like UCF in there, right? There's no random Tennessee. They're pretty much the bigger programs of college football. Number two takeaway, the 16 teams on this list are the most we've had in over a decade. So the rich have only gotten richer because there are only 20 teams that are even over 30%. The rest of college football is under 30%. That's a big difference. The majority of college football is under 30% in terms of 4- and 5-star recruits on their roster. Meanwhile, Alabama and Georgia are in the 80%. Right? Alabama's 84. That's a huge difference. That's half your roster. Number three, the third takeaway. 8 of the last 10 champions have at least been in the 60s. So we can pretty much cross off Michigan, Auburn, Oregon, Penn State, Notre Dame, Miami, and USC, which would sound about right. Right? Those are the teams that you really don't expect them to win a national championship this year. And the fourth takeaway is that most of these schools need to do more. Texas is 5th on this list. They wouldn't qualify for the college football playoff even if it was 12 teams. They wouldn't have qualified in the last decade. And yet, on paper, they have the fifth best roster heading into this season. So they need to turn that into something with Steve Sarkisian. Michigan is 10th. I defend Harbaugh. But when you have the 10th best roster in college football, you got to be performing more like a top 10 team. Penn State, Miami, USC, they're on this list. They have to step it up. I think Miami will have a good year. I think Penn State bounces back. We'll see about USC. But those are three schools that historically are very good, haven't really met those expectations lately. You're still getting the players. You're getting the recruits. You have the talent on paper. You got to win more. It's time to start winning like some of the other teams on this list, because at least on paper, not a huge difference. You can match up to these teams a lot better than anyone else in college football. They have the excuses. Right? Well, Alabama, they have twice as many four and five-star recruits as us. But in the case of somebody like Michigan, it's not that big of a difference. By the way, next in line, that falls the teams that fall just below that line of 50%, giving them a chance to win the national title, you have Washington at 49%, Tennessee at 48%, Florida State at 42%, UNC at only 35%, a lot of people like them, and no other teams are even over 30%. And these percentages that I'm throwing out at you are the percentage of four- and five-star recruits on the roster. South Carolina, they're at 28% of their roster. So that's top 25, but still plenty of work to do. You have to almost double that production to be in line with a national champion. Only one team, Oregon, has ever made the national title in the past decade with less than half of their roster being four- and five-star recruits. Not win, but even made it. In fact, they're the only team below the 50% mark to actually win a playoff game. And they did it that year when they had the Heisman winner. So while they didn't have as much talent on the roster compared to some other schools, they did have, theoretically, the best player in college football that year in Marcus Mariota. That makes up for it. So you either need over 50% or have the Heisman winner to give yourself a chance just to compete in the playoff and eventually win a national title. So who will win a national championship in college football this year? I mean, we know every year the teams, the usual suspects. But that list of 16 teams I gave you are the ones that actually have a chance. But of those 16, I would narrow it down even further. And you're talking about the usual suspects. Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson. And sure, we can throw in LSU, Oklahoma, Texas, and Florida. Maybe even a Texas A&M. But I would put those teams in the next tier. Alabama, 84% of their roster. Four- and five-star recruits, the highest we've seen. They should be the ones to win the national championship once again. Coming up, what will be the Gamecocks swing game this year? We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, what is the Gamecocks swing game this college football season? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. You ever have a problem around the house? You think, I can't fix that? Don't worry, because Canty can. The Canty Foundation specialists are there to help. Check them out online, cantycanfixit.com, or give them a call, 843-484-3625. Because Canty knows how tough it can be to find a contractor that you can trust. So they offer warranted solutions and a free, no-obligation estimate for all foundation repair services. And this time of year, you're running around, you don't have your shoes on, you're barefoot, you got the sandals on outside, you're out by the pool, whatever it may be. Protect your toes, because if you have concrete around the house that's cracked or uneven, such as a sidewalk, a driveway, a patio, a pool deck, the Canty Foundation Specialists offer the repair options you need to help you protect the look of your concrete, the value of your home, and the integrity of your little toes. Contact them for a free estimate today, the Canty Foundation Specialist, online at cantycanfixit.com, or call them, 843-484-3625. My final show with you until Tuesday. I'm heading out of town tomorrow. I got the email, it's time to check in. I go to check in, it says, I can't check in, you have to wait 24 hours before the flight. So why are you sending me the email telling me it's time to check in? Why don't you wait until the 24-hour mark? And it was only like 10 minutes early. So then I had to wait. And okay, this past commercial break, I just checked in. But I tried to check in earlier. Oh, no, you can't check in. It's not ready yet. Then why'd you send an email saying it's time to check in? And I haven't worn a mask in a long time. I'm double vaccinated. I'm good to go. So I haven't worn a mask in quite some time. But the policy still of these airlines have to wear a mask. Fortunately, it's a short flight. It's going to be odd putting the mask back on for hours like that. I got no problem wearing the mask, but, you know, it's double vaccinated. That's the whole idea, not having to wear the mask. And now I'm going to have to sit on the plane with the mask on. But I'm looking forward to it. Going to go celebrate Father's Day with the family. Hey, what's the Gamecock swing game this year? Josh Pate was talking about this on his Late Kick podcast. He's been on the show a number of times. I've talked about the swing game before. I agree with a lot of things that Josh says, but we disagree on this. Josh Pate was talking about what the swing game would be for the Gamecocks. Here's what he had to say.
Kentucky at South Carolina in week 4. This is all about not letting Georgia beat you twice. They got a trip, I think, to Georgia the week before. And they're going to be a heavy, heavy underdog there. And I don't expect them to win that game. But what you can't be doing is having the residue of that game linger against Kentucky. I think this is going to be a situation, by the way, where Carolina fans, South Carolina fans, I've gotten a lot of feedback on that. So South Carolina fans, I think you guys would be a little uncomfortable if you knew what the point spread would be on this game today. We would make it internally Kentucky -7.5 at Williams-Brice Stadium, no less. And I reached out to an odds maker buddy, and they actually said 8. So they'd have it even fatter than we would. That shouldn't make you comfortable if you're a South Carolina fan, because there's no reason for that to be the case, home or road, to be an 8-point dog against Kentucky. But that's where they are right now. Well, that's why this is a swing game. Win this game. I mean, that's the definition of a swing game. They're going to need a couple of gut checks this year. If they're going to hit any kind of reasonable win total, this is going to be one of those gut check games, because you don't plan on it happening against the likes of Georgia or Florida, and so you got to get it done here.
Josh Pate on the swing game for the Gamecocks. He believes it's that game against Kentucky and makes the point, right? It's after the Georgia game. Don't let it turn into 2 losses. I've said on the show before that the most important games for the Gamecocks this year, I believe, are Kentucky, Tennessee, and Auburn. The 3 times you go up against another SEC team that also has a first-year coach. You want to see how you stack up in your first year compared to their first year. How's our guy compared to their guy? Ryan, Josh, not Kentucky, Tennessee and Auburn are those 2 cases. Kentucky, Stoops has obviously been there a long time. But Kentucky is one of those games at home. It's a winnable game. The other two, I would say, are Tennessee and Auburn with the first-time coaches to see how you match up. And I've said before that I believe Tennessee is the biggest game. That is not only the biggest game on the schedule, but it's also the swing game. Even though Auburn has a first-year head coach, their visit to Williams-Brice is later in the year. It'll be towards the end of that first year. Brian Harsin will be settled in, and Auburn, I imagine, will be bigger favorites. Now, Kentucky's the 4th game of the year. Even if you lose that game, and you shouldn't be an 8-point underdog at home, by the way, right? Josh Pate mentioned that. That would mean you're a 14-point underdog at Kentucky. That's way too large. Now, it backs up what I've been saying. I think Kentucky's actually going to be pretty darn good this year. But still, I don't care what happened. South Carolina's got a new coach. They had a terrible year last year. You should not be an 11-point underdog on a neutral field. You should not be 11 points behind Kentucky. And if you were going to play them there, you'd be a 2-touchdown underdog. That's too big of a gap. But even if South Carolina loses that game, they could still be 3-2 at that point and should be at least 4-3 after the Vanderbilt game, which comes 2 weeks later. If they lose to Kentucky, you should still be sitting at worst 4-3. That's still solid. But Tennessee, I think, is the more important game and also the bigger of a potential swing, because Tennessee, A, is on the road as opposed to home. Right? And you could tell me, I mean, we could have a debate on it. What's more important? You got to win your home games, but also you go on the road. That's a chance to beat a team, a beatable team on the road. Road wins are huge. You're getting Josh Heupel early on in his first year at Tennessee, and you're getting him early October. Right? He's still early on the job. And you want to see, I think Tennessee is a good program to compare yourself to if you're the Gamecocks. Both first-year coaches, they had a lot of issues off the field, right? We heard about Will Muschamp and his culture and things have to change. Well, for Tennessee, they're trying to change some things too after the way things ended with Jeremy Pruitt and these stories about guys getting money in McDonald's bags. So both programs, a little bit in disarray this offseason, both hiring new coaches, maybe both not meeting their standards. Let's see who can get off to the better start this year in year one. Let's see who can settle things down quicker or better. It's a winnable game on the road at Tennessee. Their first-time head coach, first time he's coaching in the SEC. It'd be a big win for the Gamecocks, and I think it is a winnable game. And if they win that game, you're looking at 4-2 at worst. At least you should be, with Vanderbilt on deck. and you should beat Vanderbilt, and you'd be looking at 5-2 for the Gamecocks. And you may be driving around now thinking, like, that's crazy. This guy thinks the Gamecocks are going to go 5-2. When is he going to learn? That's fair. But if you look at their schedule, where they're non-conference games, and then you get a Vanderbilt a little bit later on, if you beat Tennessee on the road, you could be 5-2. That includes losses to, I think it's Georgia and Kentucky. You win your other non-conference games, you beat Tennessee, you beat Vanderbilt, you're off to a 5-2 start. But a loss to Tennessee, now suddenly that puts you back at 4-3, leading into Texas A&M, then Florida, then Missouri on the road, then Auburn, then Clemson. Not really any winnable games. I mean, at Missouri, but I think Missouri will be tougher than maybe some people think. So then you'd be 4-3 going into a real tough part of your schedule. You got to stack the wins while you can. On the road at Tennessee is a winnable game. And if you win it, you go into that tough stretch where, well, we may not win a game the rest of the year, but you already have 5 victories. I think Tennessee is the swing game. You lose that game, and it's like, oh, shoot. And we're essentially 500, and now we have to worry about Texas A&M, Florida, Auburn, Clemson. You got to take advantage of the winnable games. Kentucky at home, winnable. Tennessee on the road, winnable. And I think Kentucky is actually certainly in a better spot. I think they're in a better spot than Tennessee. So even though it's home versus road, it's tougher to go on the road. You go on the road to Tennessee, they may even be a more winnable game than Kentucky. Right? Kentucky, apparently, in the eyes of Vegas, is 11 points better than the Gamecocks. That's a big difference. I think Tennessee is the swing game and the most important game on the Gamecocks' schedule this year. Coming up, speaking of college football, we have the best nickname in college football. And also, a local media member almost got himself in some big trouble with some barbecue. We'll get to that when we come back as well. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Great show. You did a good job.
You're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke, and I don't know how you do it, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
All through this long and sleepless night, I hear my neighbors talking.
She don't love
saying that out of my life, to another's arms. Soon be walking.
Somebody shake me, break me.
When it's over,
when it's over.
Somebody tell me that I'm dreaming. And wake me when it's over.
Coming up, the best nickname in college football. And a local media member almost got himself in big trouble with some barbecue over the weekend. It's the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand to ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. Open the show, talk about Kevin Durant's performance last night. A lot of news coming out of the NBA. Stan Van Gundy fired after 1 year in New Orleans, so Zion Williamson will have his third coach in 3 years. That can't be good. We'll see if the next coach can figure things out there with him. Kawhi Leonard may be out for the rest of the series for the Clippers. That's not good. They don't stand much of a chance without Kawhi. And Chris Paul tested positive for COVID, it seems, or at least he's in COVID protocol. I guess I shouldn't say he tested positive, not necessarily. Now, before everyone jumps the gun, he was vaccinated back in February. But again, you could be vaccinated and still test positive, or even if you're in close contact, that falls into the rules of the NBA.
Well, too, there was a cruise ship that recently set sail. Everyone had to be vaccinated, and they come back, and there's a growing number of people who come back positive.
Huh. So for Chris Paul, you want to talk about bad luck, right? This is some bad luck for him. The good thing is the Suns, they don't have to play again for a little while as that Clippers series goes on. So hopefully Chris Paul can return, because without him, the Suns will really be in trouble. So the postseason of, if you want to call them injuries, the Chris Paul thing isn't necessarily an injury. Players being unavailable, let's say, right? It continues, and it continues to be a big deal. So, over the weekend, There's a radio host. He's on national radio on CBS Sports, Damon Amendolara. He was coming down to Charleston, so I reached out on social media and just said, hey, you know, have fun on Charleston. Welcome to town. And Damon tells a story in his podcast yesterday as he returned back to work about meeting up with a local media member here in Charleston and a potential awkward situation that almost ensued. Here's the story from Damon Amendolara.
So how about this? When I was down in Charleston, last week I said I need a recommendation. Actually, the affiliate down there carries Sunday Morning Football, one of the sports radio affiliates. They do not carry our show, but they carry Sunday Morning Football. So they tweeted at me like, welcome to Charleston, heard that you're going to be coming down here, like enjoy. And I said, if you have any recommendations on barbecue, I'd love them. So a guy who works in TV in Charleston named Bill Burr, now that's the name also of a comedian, but this is a different Bill Burr, retweeted at me and he said, hey, you know, here's some of the best spots for barbecue. And if you come down here, it's my treat. And I was like, wow, that's really nice. He works in the industry. So Bill said this and I said, you know, I won't know anybody down there and I'd love to catch up. So that sounds great. I'll let you know. And so when I was down there, I tweeted at him and then we exchanged DMs with cell phone numbers. And he was like, yeah, if you want to grab lunch tomorrow, let's do it. So me and my wife end up going to Rodney Scott's barbecue. And this was very funny because I had said in the direct messages, we'll meet you there. And he, of course, had offered to pay for lunch. Now, I didn't mind if he did or not. It was just nice to catch up with a friendly face and somebody that listens to the show, obviously a big sports fan. So when I said, we'll meet you over there, I had not mentioned it was just my wife and I. He came and he met us and he was just such a pleasant guy, great guy. And he offered to pay for lunch and that was very, very nice of him. I didn't want to soak him too much. So I just got like a very conservative platter of pulled pork. I wasn't going to like, you know, buy the half a rack and the three meat combo. But afterwards he goes, I have to admit something. I didn't know how much of your crew was going to be down here. He said, I didn't know when I was driving over here if it was going to be your entire crew, like you were doing a radio show, or if it was like a listener event. And I was panicking about how many people I was going to have to pay for barbecue for.
Oh, no.
He's like, I didn't know if I was going to walk into like a remote broadcast where there was like 100 listeners and I had offered to pay for all of them. And he was like, I started to race through ways that I could like have, you know, other people I work with pick up some of the tab.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so I said, oh, no, I would have never done that to you, but that's hysterical. So it just ended up being, you know, the Bourbon Bell ordered a little something, I ordered a little something. But he thought he was going to walk in and have to pay for like 100 people at a bar remote to eat food, or even just me and you, which we would have went to town and the bar tab would have been up there.
DA, as he's known, Damon Amendolara, sharing the story about meeting up with Bill Burr, who you may see on TV, not the comedian. The local news anchor who you may be watching on TV each night to get some barbecue. What's the play there? If you say, hey, I'll get you lunch, you show up, and fortunately this wasn't the situation here, but if you show up and it's a lot more people than you're expecting, how can you get out of paying lunch after already offering? How can you, like, rescind that offer? What is the, turning into an awkward situation, or just kind of being a jerk by taking back your offer? You offer to pay lunch, you show up, you realize, oh boy, this is a lot more than I bargained for.
First question, does he have an expense account for such events?
That's true. Now, you heard DA mention he was, you know, talking to coworkers like, hey, we got to get together our per diems here to be able to buy lunch. Fortunately, it was just two people. Now, I'll say this, DA also shared that, you know, he took it light because Bill was kind enough to treat him to lunch. I'm sorry, if somebody offers to buy me lunch, hey, that you—that's what you asked for. I'm going all out. Right? And if someone else is paying, all right, I'm getting this, I'm getting that. You offered, that's on you. I'm getting whatever I want to eat. Damon was kinder to eat lightly with someone else paying.
Now, when a friend of the show, Dan Adute, comes to town, because he said he likes the mustard-based barbecue sauce here.
That's right.
So, yeah, Bill Burr, I don't think he's going to bring a whole posse or anything like that or an entire show. So he'd be a safe bet.
Okay. I'll offer to get him barbecue. And if Dan Adute wants to go wild and get all sorts of things, I would understand because I'd probably do the same thing. We've been tracking Bill, by the way. He's going to try to stop by on his way to work to get his side of the story. showing up to go meet DA for barbecue and realizing, wait a minute, is he doing a radio show? Is he here on vacation? Am I going to have to pay lunch for 100 people? And if so, how can I get out of that? Always an awkward situation. Coming up, we'll catch up with a member of the Charleston Battery, as we do each and every week. And we'll do it next. Hour 2 coming up when we come back. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.